Hello everyone, welcome to edition 148 of the NRF1 podcast, your Formula 1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, United Kingdom, and brought to you by our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. Have some racing fun by signing up to the game. Simply visit nrf1.uk or gpro.net/nrf1 and join us there. My name is sports journalist and sometime F1 correspondent Michael Bailey, and we are here to review the season opening Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne. And for a bumper, it's basically a bumper pod, I would say, that we've got joining me, two times Beckles kart champion Kyle Cumbers.
Hello.
Motoring journalist David Tillier.
Hello.
You see how I refined that? That was good, wasn't it? That was good.
A bit more succinct than last time.
A bit more, yeah. It's like I planned it. And Damon Hill fan and Mustang owner, Richard Baxter.
Good evening.
How are we, everyone? All well? Enjoying ourselves? And I guess first primary question, what do we make of the Australian Grand Prix? The season is up and running, gents.
It was an average race. It wasn't too bad. It wasn't the best, wasn't the worst. Yeah, at least we had a different winner.
It's almost like the pre-season opportunity was what made this race good, as opposed to the action on the track. And we've had kind of rumbles, haven't we, since, from Lewis Hamilton, Nico Hülkenberg. Racing wasn't great and it was actually quite difficult, but we had the intrigue.
Yeah, to be honest, to me it felt like a 2016 race that was ever so slightly quicker. The cars were ever so slightly faster, but the racing on track didn't seem any different. There wasn't anything noticeably obvious about the racing that was better or worse, or didn't. It was just roughly the same as it has been for the last couple of years. The cars are just a hell of a lot faster.
A hell of a lot faster. Rich?
Yeah, I'm hoping that race is kind of the calm before the storm, because we often see with Australia, it's not the best race, but you know, you every now and again you get some excitement. But then often it goes off to other circuits and you have an absolutely stormer, absolutely cracking race. So I'm hoping that when we get to, you know, full-time F1 circuits, as I'm going to call them, rather than street circuits, as we've got coming up, I'm hoping that then we'll have much more overtaking and more fireworks.
We can but hope, can't we? Well, the crux, of course, of all this, which wasn't like 2016 DT, was that Ferrari won a race, which they didn't do all of last year. Sebastian Vettel won a race, and he looked a little bit more on it.
Yeah, I think, Mercedes obviously cocked up with their strategy and getting stuck behind in the traffic. But I think Vettel won it on merit and on pace as well. You know, so he was right behind Lewis right up until that pit stop anyway. He was giving him a hard time. So, if it carries on this way and they're close, I think that's one of the good things about this race, is that it shows that we might actually have a battle between different teams rather than just an inter-team battle, which we're getting a bit bored of now.
I looked at the predictions and actually quite a few people predicted that Vettel would win. Some people even put some money on it. And you know the bit where I said I definitely wouldn't put money on it? Well, I did, and I'm glad I did. So was I wrong to be surprised?
I think the test, everybody was suspicious, which is fair enough after the test, because they looked strong in 2016. And then after the Friday practice, it looked like it was the sort of same old as last year. They somehow turned it around, and I think they gained a bit of pace, and Mercedes seemed to lose a bit of pace over Saturday and Sunday, and it's a good performance. And then obviously it was a Mercedes mistake, but it was Vettel putting pressure on Mercedes, which they haven't had for a while. And it's like in any sport, if you put pressure on, then sometimes it comes home. So we'll see. Hopefully with other tracks, hopefully they're as strong as Mercedes, and Red Bull can catch up as well.
The big question it leads us to, isn't it? Is it going to be a genuine challenge to Mercedes? And I guess having these two teams challenging is better than two drivers from one team challenging.
Yeah, I hope so. Because, I mean, if you look at Australia last year, of course, Vettel did go and take the lead, and he was holding it for a while until, well, you know, arguably messed up himself by going off, but also strategy and things. But from then, they never really pushed Mercedes at all. So I'm hoping that now they've won a race, even if they do drop back a bit at their other circuits, I'm hoping that they're still within touching distance, can still fight them all the way. I wouldn't be surprised if they do, because they've clearly thought of something different with their car that a lot of people haven't. So,
I mean, there were 0.3 between Vettel and Hamilton, who was on pole, of course, in qualifying. So there is still a gap there. And I suppose a curious thing is, I think this got mentioned on the Checkered Flag podcast, we saw a definitive one and two, didn't we, for each team? It was Vettel and Hamilton. Bottas and Raikkonen were kind of nowhere near it, really, in race or in qualifying.
Is that the, with these new cars that are quicker? Is it showing a bigger difference between the drivers, possibly? Or maybe it's just a one off lap, which Hamilton and Vettel are known for being pretty quick and on one lap. So, but I think the speed of the cars will make the gap wider between teammates, which is good because we get to see who actually is the better teammate.
I also think that Hamilton helped make the gap between the sort of resurgent Ferrari and Mercedes that little bit smaller, because I think if it wasn't Hamilton in that car, would have been a Ferrari pole. If they'd have, you know, if Hamilton had gone to another team and they had Bottas and someone else, I can guarantee that Ferrari, I think Ferrari would have been quicker. And I think having Lewis in that car is just giving that extra few tenths that's just making the Mercedes that bit quicker. I don't write off Kimi yet, though. I still think he's got
as if we'd ever write off Kimi. Yeah,
I think he's still got some pace in him. He's one of those drivers that everything needs to be working 100%, and he needs to be in the zone. But I think throughout the season, I think we'll see some quite impressive performances from Kimi, maybe even a win.
Is that because you played Kimi in our karting video?
Well, obviously Kimi. I was channeling the essence of Kimi, but by playing Kimi, he's obviously now channeling the essence of me.
Oh.
I don't know where I'm going with that.
Yeah, basically, he needs to stop doing that. But if you want to watch the video, go over to nrf1.uk/nrf1tube and you'll find our karting video from Mellor Park. Pre-season testing, it's called at the moment. But it is epic.
You played Vettel, didn't you, in that?
Yes. Now, I was kind of... Because we did it in 2013. It took me 4 years to edit. We all know that. But at that point, of course, it was all about his finger. The finger was all he was doing all the time. I was worried that would be lost on everyone. Why does he keep doing that finger? Well, we could see the finger back, Rich.
We could, yeah. I mean, we could also see a bit of a dance as well.
The dance, which is, of course, on our Twitter feeds, which a Twitter feed and on Facebook to preview. Did you like the dance?
Yeah, I did like the dance. It was.
Didn't you redo it then?
I liked your interpretation of it. That's what it is.
I didn't quite nail the Egyptian part. I felt I let myself down there. But the jumping into the blinds nailed it. If you want to see it, go over to our Facebook or our Twitter pages, the handle you need, at the NRF1. Oh, dear. Hamilton was in a funny mood, wasn't he? He was quite whingy. It felt like he'd kind of forgotten what it was like to be put under pressure by someone who wasn't his teammate. That's what it came across to me, Rich.
Yeah, definitely. For some of it, he seemed like he was really on edge and he didn't know how to handle, you know, someone else racing. And I mean, if you remember back to when Vettel was winning race in, race out, everyone was questioning his racing ability. And I suppose no one's done the same to Hamilton. But that could throw up questions after dominating so long and only having one rival. Does that put you off, you know, as a racing driver? I mean, rhetorical question, basically, because I'm not a racing driver. But it'd be something to ask Hamilton himself, even though you probably wouldn't get an honest answer. But
they answer it properly, don't they?
He often is that way, isn't he? He's a little bit emotional, should we say, over the radio.
In the car, isn't it? It's like something in the car. And then when he came out, he was obviously very calm and measured.
I think that's part of what makes him quick. I think, in a way, it's just maybe that's the way he sort of gets himself going. I think because he was moaning about the tyres. I think Mercedes probably got to learn. They got to be a little bit stronger with him and sort of say, "No, Lewis, it's all fine."
Yeah, are we blaming Lewis or the team, or because it does seem that they completely misjudged the wear of the tyres and that's why they came in early, whereas he needed just to get on with it. To be honest,
yeah, I think probably about 50-50, wasn't it? I mean, obviously, we don't hear all the radio messages, but they probably just. I mean, if they'd have come in and Verstappen would have pitted two laps later, they may have won the race. So we would have said, "Oh, good decision." And if they hadn't pitted and say Vettel pitted and got ahead and threw that way, then we'd have said they should have pitted early. So obviously hindsight is a wonderful thing, but they still were doing purple sectors and they still were quite quick. So I think Mercedes just need to be a little bit stronger with Lewis and sort of say, "No, it's fine," because obviously he can't see the whole picture either. He might think, "Oh, I'm getting slower and everybody else is getting quicker," but I'm sure they'll learn.
I'm sure they will. I mean, Lewis will point to the fact that he only came in a lap earlier than he was going to anyway on his strategy, but maybe the strategy wasn't right.
I think it's a bit of a shame that that's what it came down to, and we didn't actually get to see a more of an out-and-out fight between the two of them. But I think going back to what you said about Lewis, and that is what makes Lewis who he is. He's quite a fiery person in the car. He's quite an emotional character, and he's not a two-dimensional figure in Formula 1, and I don't think we want two-dimensional figures. Was it Jake that said in one of the podcasts he did with him about, you know, he's the only superstar
yes
that we have in Formula 1? And I actually listened to that, I thought, yeah, I really agree with that, that he is the only superstar, and that's not good enough. We do need more people, you know. And yeah, stop criticising Lewis Hamilton for being a larger character than him, than the person he is behind the wheel. I was going to say, what I can't understand though is, was he getting booed on the podium?
I've got that here. He was getting booed. It didn't really come across properly other than in people's reactions. What is with Formula One fans going to a track and booing anyone, of the drivers on the podium? Yeah. Why? It doesn't matter who it is or why. Just don't do it, you idiots. Stop. This absolutely ridiculous. Have some respect for the people who are putting on the show for you. Really annoys me. You may have sensed that. I just want to touch on Valtteri Bottas. Did he do well enough? And conversely, did the team actually tell him not to race with Lewis while he was closing down on him towards the end?
I don't think the team did, because I thought if the team were to say anything, it would have been broadcast, because it's juicy. It's something that everyone wants to listen to. So I think if they had said anything, they would have been, you know, it would have been broadcast. But also, why would they say, you know, don't go for your teammate when the last three seasons, when you've had Rosberg and Hamilton who have been much closer together fighting on track, they've let them race? Okay, it's come off disastrously at times.
Maybe the rules are different now, Rich. Number one, number two.
Well, it does seem like we're always going to have two Finns as number two in Bottas and Raikkonen. But, I mean, we've seen glimpses from Bottas where he's been super quick, like at Silverstone a couple of years ago. And if he can pull off something like that at the next race and really show what he's got, then I think it's going to be more interesting. But also, I suppose with Ferrari in the zone, it's not the Mercedes don't have to worry about each other so much. You've got another team to worry about. So it really does come down to teamwork.
First non-Mercedes driver or car to lead a championship since 2013. It's been a remarkable statistic. First race winner. Now, I didn't catch the stat, but there is a stat, isn't there, about the race winner of Australia going on to win the championship. Can anyone remember what that stat is? If we can't, we'll put it out.
Five out of the last seven or something along those lines.
Okay, well, maybe one of you guys and girls out there will know the answer to the stat, because I've tried to catch and I didn't catch it, but clearly the certain number of people who have won the Australian Grand Prix or the first race of the season go on then to win the championship, and I'd be interested to know what that is. There we go. Okay, well, just a bit of admin, if you like. We hit 50,000 listens on Audio Boom over the weekend. We only moved over to Audio Boom in the summer, so thanks, Audio Boom, for all your help. More to come, most definitely. Our season predictions and my 2017 chat, as DT, you mentioned, with Jake Humphrey in his kitchen, putting all the wrongs to right. That one in F1. Jake still knows his stuff. Brilliant to chat to him. He's still involved in Formula 1 as well. They're all there, all available to listen to on your podcast player of choice. All you need to do is visit nrf1.uk/podsubscribe to find your link, be it iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Spreaker, Stitcher, Acast, whatever. And if yours isn't there, email us, tell us where it is or which one it is, and we'll sort it out. And also, listeners, we love you and we hope you enjoy the show. If you do, then the best way you can tell all your friends, apart from rocking up at their house and knocking on the door and giving them a link, is to go and give us a rating and a review on iTunes, and that'll help us move up the charts and spread the love if you enjoy what you're listening. If you don't, that's fine, although I would kind of question why you're still listening to it. But also, again, that's still fine. Right, for the first time in 2017, let's bring you the NRF1 Pit Stops. Yes, your pit stop impression still hasn't changed, DT. You'll be delighted to know. Let's start at Red Bull, shall we? Daniel Ricciardo. I mean, I'm going to pronounce his name right, but that would be literally it in terms of his weekend. I should call him Ricciardo for how badly it went in Australia. I mean, he's not had the best of home races in general, but that one. Is that one worse than when he was on the podium and then they ditched him off it?
Yeah, because it was just a shocker overall. I mean, the crash in F No, qualifying, sorry. Yeah. Qualifying.
Which is his fault. I mean, it's all stemmed from something that was his fault.
Yeah, so, and also I think Palmer and Stroll crashed in practice and had problems in the race. So obviously, can't be a coincidence.
It's a lesson there.
Yeah, don't crash in practice. But, yeah, and Red Bull weren't quick.
No, is that the bigger worry? Because, it, I mean, Verstappen was around, but...
I think that's the worry, that they were, what, 25 seconds behind Vettel? That's a big distance. And all end of last year and over the summer, everybody was saying, oh, Red Bull will be strong this year, Adrian Newey, aerodynamics is...
Until testing. And then testing, they sort of started reeling it in a bit, didn't they?
But then you still thought, Newey's got something up his sleeve. That's just a bit of a test. I got through that, they'll rock up in Melbourne, and some new bits, and be competing at the front. And they weren't. And a fair distance behind, so... I mean, that's the bigger worry than the crash. And also that you may have lost an engine, which isn't great when you only got four.
I only got four. Yeah. It's not, and to have an engine blow after the end of the first weekend. They need to wind the watch up, don't they?
Yeah.
Wind the watch engine.
The watch engine, yeah. I think I said on one of the podcasts, look out for Red Bull.
And you did, actually. I was listening back to them, DT. Yeah, I felt sorry for you.
Yeah. And thanks, guys. I'm eating my words now. I'm shocked that they are not quite... where I thought they'd be, to be perfectly honest with you. I thought they showed a bit of promise, but I also, like Carl said, they're the sort of team that they'll come out with something fairly simple in testing, and then they'll come out with something a little bit more interesting. And I have no doubt that they'll improve, but it seems like McLaren and Ferrari have really stolen the march.
I mean, Max was the best of the rest, wasn't he? And it was nice to see Max back on track, because you do kind of forget how good he is, and we didn't maybe see enough of him, but he's still a bit of fun there, and he still had a key role in the race.
Yeah, I mean, he got fifth. He's still getting points for the team. You know, as a sole Red Bull, that was important. But what really got me was the fact that, you know, the Red Bull, they missed the start of the race. They had him in the pit lane, and they let a couple of laps go past, and then they sent him out anyway. And, of course, it all failed. So it's just, is that a bit of a waste of time, knowing that you're not really going to get back into it? Okay, it's the guy's home Grand Prix. He wants to do what he can. But was that just a bit of a waste of time, adding extra wear and tear to the engine that could cost them more in future?
Well, given that, I think on the commentary they were talking about him, you know, pulling him in if points were definitely not on the cards early to save the engine. And of course, what happens? The engine blows. And also the hope of having a safety car, because there have been so many safety cars in the past at Melbourne, completely irrelevant now, because they can just sling on a virtual safety car and you don't even send a car out. So I don't even think that history has any kind of relevance, but they've got to send him out, haven't they? Home Grand Prix, like you say, give him a show.
Yeah, of course, if you look at Webber, he never had any luck at Melbourne either, so it's obviously like the Australian curse.
The damned Aussies. Who wants to talk about McLaren? Go on, DT.
I do.
I've just got one line here. Best race of Alonso's career, said Fernando.
Yeah. all I'll say about McLaren is livery, engine, car.
I mean, I do like the detailing bit at the front of the nose.
It's atrocious, isn't it? You know, they are noticeably than teams that should be significantly, they should be significantly ahead, even with a poor engine. You'd think after 3 years, the might of Honda and the might of McLaren might have actually got to the point where they can...
It's been 3 years.
Yeah, this is their third season, isn't it?
Is it? Jesus. Wow. I mean, we've just been slagging off Red Bull, effectively, nicely. But they send out Ricciardo in a patched-up car, and he just blitzed past Stoffel van Dorn, didn't he? And you're like, oh dear.
It's not only the engine that's the problem. There's like, van Dorn had steering wheel problems, and they had to come in and reset the car, control alt delete.
That's Honda's fault though, right?
Probably, yeah, because everything's Honda's fault. But they do have a lot of, over the last few years with Honda, they still have a lot of problems. You don't get the impression the car is actually that great aerodynamically.
No, hang on, they'd be winning races if it wasn't for the engine. Sorry, Kyle,
yes, I forgot that. Yeah, all these statements they can come out with, and it's easy to blame Honda. And it's all this, like, people say, oh, Alonso's driving his best, well, better than he's ever done. We don't know he is, because he's sitting around in 12th or 13th position. It doesn't matter, does it? It doesn't matter where Alonso finishes, in a way, because...
Yeah, getting overtaken from both sides by Force India and a Renault.
And the cars, yeah. Oh my God, it's pink. I think that's literally what he said.
I will just say, though, in some hope for McLaren, it's almost like trying to polish a turd by saying this.
I love that saying.
But at least they had a car finish the race.
Yeah.
They
which you did predict.
Yeah, so that's more one prediction that came off. But that's the thing, if you look where they were in pre-season testing, I think, was it only once they did more than 10 laps in one go? And okay, they kind of restarted the car halfway through the race at the pit stop, but they still did the laps, they still got a car to finish the race. If in the next 2 weeks they manage to improve as much as they have, maybe by the time it gets to the European season, it really starts kicking off, they might be able to get a point. Who knows?
You're probably the best salesman for McLaren at the moment, Rich. The job you're doing. A point. Well, yes.
Just, when they actually had the Mercedes engines, Force India beat them when they were the customer team Mercedes. They were the third quickest out of Force. There's no proof in recent years that McLaren can actually build a decent car.
I think it's overall a complete show.
Don't forget, any of those predictions you want to listen to, we've got the predictions podcasts separately hived off now, so you'll be able to find them, give them a listen. We're working through, I've started setting up all the prediction league fun and games. It's going to be lots of fun. Big things for that this season. Right, just a couple of other places to stop off at. Sauber, we've got to give a mention to Antonio Giovinazzi. I could pronounce that right. What an effort. Italian driver on the grid. He didn't know he was racing until Saturday again, because Pascal Wellein hasn't really recovered from this Race of Champions accident, which is curious, and back injuries are not easy to get over. What an effort from Giovinazzi. Where did he finish, Carl? Gone, Rich.
12th.
He beat us to it. That's like 12th position.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, legendary drive, I think. I think for a first, considering the fact that he's literally found out on Saturday, wasn't it, that he was going to be taking part, and absolutely amazing. To be honest, I would say just keep him in that seat for the rest of the season.
There are question marks. I mean, do we know when Verlaine's going to come back? Or,
well, it wasn't actually the injury, it was his fitness seemed to be the problem, because he was injured for so long that he wasn't able to build up his fitness. But
you'd find that out during the race, though, wouldn't you, rather than practice?
I want to know if Verlaine sent the sick note in or if his mum did it for him.
Yeah. It's not, you give up your seat, you give the risk of Sauber going, actually, we quite like this guy.
But I mean, we've had things about Pascal Verlaine, not wishing to cast aspersions, mm-hmm. but we've had character traits earmarked, you know, previously, and it's maybe got in the way of other things.
I personally, to be honest, without being rude to him, I think he bottled it. I think he thought, I think he didn't feel comfortable with the car in practice and thought, oh, I don't want to race, so he gave up for that. I think that was just an excuse. But the other thing, though, the other driver in their team is Ericsson, who crashed at the first or third corner, wasn't it, or something.
Did he get taken out? Racing incident, I think, is what it went down as, which we're going to see a lot of, but effectively Kevin Magnussen drove into the back of him, and that's a Haas driver, and Carl agrees. Yeah. So,
and then he retired anyway later on. He's not had the best track record, Ericsson. And then you've got this new lad who kind of went through the race, performed well, with having one practice session under his belt.
All right, but he's an honorary Norfolkian, Marcus Ericsson, and I made sure that he got good things on my predictions, so I'm hoping he'll come good. Brilliant.
And we've got an Italian driver on the grid as well, which is great for Italy. Ferrari win, get a driver that's done reasonably well. Yeah,
it's not bad, is it? No. It's 70th anniversary of Ferrari this year, isn't it? Apparently, in Formula One. Did I hear that right?
I thought it was last year.
Yeah. Edit that bit out.
Car SF70, isn't it?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they did all the 70th anniversary celebrations last year with their LaFerrari Aperta and stuff.
I did just want to touch on Force India as well. First points for Esteban Ocon, and a great overtake, the one I think we already touched on, DT, with Alonso and Hülkenberg too. That was a great piece of action.
Yeah, brilliant. That was, I don't really want to get ahead of myself, but yeah, I like the race.
You have got ahead of yourself, DT. Well, I tell you what, let's move things on. As we mentioned, our social media channels, if you want to get in touch, Twitter and Facebook at the NRF1, or as a Facebook address, try fb.me/the NRF1. We'll have lots of chances for you to interact, subscribe, support us, and sign up over the season. Essentially, everything you need to know, you'll find at our website, nrf1.uk, including some cracking blogs as well. And the racing tips, which you can read retrospectively. It's always good fun. And of course, you can email us, get in touch. We have people getting in touch with predictions now. There's a lot of people getting in touch with predictions on all our channels. It's going to be a lot of work for me, I'm sensing. But email us with anything you want, questions for the pod, comments, you say, we'll get it in, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. This is a message for you, our dear NRF1 listeners. In the last year, there is a young British startup that has shaken up the shaving industry. Over 100,000 men have joined Cornerstone and are now getting a smoother shave than ever before. It's a simple combination of great products, amazing customer support, free delivery, and fair prices that has made Cornerstone the fastest growing shaving company in the UK. It's basically shaving's equivalent to Max Verstappen. They've won numerous awards for their super sharp German engineered razor, just think Mercedes, and outstanding customer support, like a Charlie Whiting hotline. Along with endless plaudits from the media, including GQ, Esquire, and the Daily Telegraph. That would be Max Verstappen again. Cornerstone know they need to earn your trust, though, so to let you try their award-winning razor for a fraction of the standard price, with this offer you can get £10 off their razor and get started for just £4. Just visit cornerstone.co.uk and enter the code NRF1 at checkout. Visit cornerstone.co.uk to find out what a smooth shave actually feels like, and if you don't like your Cornerstone razor, Cornerstone will even give you your money back, no questions asked. Now, let's get back to that NRF1 podcast, shall we? Let's bring you our awards. It's our Of the Weekends. As always, our driver of the weekend is named after honorary Norfolkian Rodolfo Gonzalez. So, Rodolfo Gonzalez, driver of the weekend. Who are we going to put forward, please?
Gio.
Yes, I've got Antonio Giovinazzi as well.
That's why I'm going to call him Gio. It's just so Gio, much easier.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think I probably should mention Massa as well. He did a decent race.
He did. Ped slagged him off completely. He was like, Lance Stroll's going to annihilate him. He'll be out before the end of the year. You're done. Sorry, Ped, to mention that. But
I slagged him off as well over the winter. So yeah, he had a decent weekend.
He did. I didn't even think Williams had it in them, to be honest. Team of the weekends.
I want to give it to Toro Rosso. Because their car looks the best on the grid. And they got double points. And they've got two drivers who did do some good racing as well.
Renault engine this year?
Yes.
Yeah, that's not bad, is it? Anyone else? Or agree? You can agree?
Pretty Ferrari.
Yeah. I had Ferrari.
Yeah, Ferrari, I think, just for being the first non-Mercedes championship challenger.
Force India gave them honorary mention. They're two in the top 10, didn't they?
And they're pink.
And they are pink, which is a fan's favourite, in as these four fans anyway. Our Pastor Maldonado, it's returned. Pastor Maldonado of the weekend, or GOAT of the weekend. Someone who was crap, someone who was really shit, or someone who was shit for some particular
McLaren,
Honda, because they get the blame for everything. Lewis Hamilton for whinging and botching his pit stop. You could argue. Anyone else?
I think Magnussen, just for never really having control of his vehicle for the whole weekend.
Still not getting a penalty for it.
Yeah, I think Haas overall.
Oh, Kyle! Car,
which I apologise.
Grosjean did well, though, apart from his engine blowing up.
In qualifying as well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was all looking good, but sort of Haas as a team and the reliability. Yeah. It wasn't a great weekend. Well, they could have got good points, obviously, with Grosjean. So.
And then Kyle twists the knife. I also mentioned the graphics. What was that? Why didn't they have the graphics of who was wearing the race during the race and qualifying? They seemed to
problems over the whole weekend, because in qualifying, I didn't have any up for that whole first one. Mm. And then half the time, they put the colours alongside the cars.
They got the wrong colours.
Yeah, they had the wrong colours. So it was like, what?
And they got, I think it was in qualifying, they got some of the tyres wrong as well. They'd said that Lewis Hamilton was on a used set of tyres and actually wasn't. He was on a...
I have issues with this. Were they all wrong on the app? Because I wonder if they screw them up deliberately on the TV. People go, oh, I better get the live timing app.
They were wrong on the app.
Yeah, so they were just
Hamilton's tyres that said on the app that he'd done 6-7 laps on the tyres he was going to start with.
You know why? It was in Australia, which is, of course, everything's backwards, isn't it?
Everything. We need a national anthem on that, Rich.
Should mention about the graphics, the new qualifying ones where they got the even tinier sectors.
Yeah.
They're pretty cool.
They were, but I was a bit confused because did that mean where they were progressively or just that sector? So if it was green, were they green just for that part of the track, or were they at that point back up again?
So there are three, they divided into three sectors, yes. And then each sector was divided into little mini sectors.
There's literally the time in each mini sector.
Each mini sector, because obviously they're timing them very accurately throughout the entire race.
I loved that. I thought it was nuts.
That was quite cool, because you could see the sector develop as they went around the lap, and rather than just seeing, purple, and you'd actually go, purple, green, purple, you know.
See, they got that one right then.
And also, they actually had three drivers at the bottom. normally just have two. And I'm like, there's loads of room at the bottom. Just get the top four or five in there.
So they're getting there. Yeah. They're getting there. The teething troubles, they have it every season. Highlight of the weekend, I think you've already said yours.
Yeah, I think that little overtake from Ocon and on Alonso with the Hulk capitalising at the same time, that was pretty good.
I've got a good one. It made me feel quite smug, to be honest. But you remember us saying we're changing Formula 1 for the better?
Yes.
Last year I tweeted Formula 1 saying, when are we going to get picture-in-picture? During the race, when Ricciardo was getting out of his car and walking back through the paddock, they had a shot of him and a shot of the race on the same screen.
Now, you see, there were bits when I thought they're not doing it and they should be, but I'm glad they did actually do changing Formula 1 for the better. Bring on those T-shirts.
I've already said the freeway battle into the first corner, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I did have another highlight, sorry. Turn 11. The speed that they go through, that sort of, as they come through the sort of street circuit where they've got the sort of long curve with the wall against it, then you get that left hand at turn 11 and you got the right hander at turn 12 and it's just bump, bump, and they were just flying through at a ridiculous rate. And there was a fan bit of footage that went up yesterday, I think, yesterday evening, that I saw, and showing just from the fans' perspective of the cars going through that, and it just, the cars look ridiculous through there.
They do look like they're on rails. They do look so quick. It's brilliant. You know, we'll get into discussions about whether people can overtake or not in another podcast, but
because it was the shortest Australian Grand Prix in history.
Yeah, it was like an hour and 24 minutes or something, wasn't it? It was nuts. It was just good for me because I was knackered. I had to get up early. And it was Mother's Day. Anyway, I think that's it. I was going to just say the lead up to Hamilton's pit stop, him getting more and more twitchy. And then, that, you know, it was such a crucial moment. And just fascinating how it all played out for the first time this season. And hopefully we'll get much more of it. Brilliant. I guess most people here probably know how their predictions went. I don't know. But they'll be wondering how each other's predictions went. As I said, you can catch them all on your podcast player of choice, nrf1.uk/podsubscribe. Check back to find our predictions for Australia and of course our pre-season predictions too. And come next week we will have our latest news NRF1 podcast, as well as a China preview and China predictions, separate podcasts too. That will be our weekly routine leading up to the race. Hopefully we'll have some more betting tips from Kyle. Absolutely. Fingers crossed. And some more blogs and what have you as well. As I said, if you wonder where the Sebastian Vettel finger has been and why it exists, check out our YouTube channel, our attempt at reliving Formula 1 in 2013. That is nrf1.uk/nrf1tube. Goodbye, everyone, it says here. So thanks to Kyle, to Rich, to DT. Pleasure having you all on. Thanks to all you guys out there for listening. And thanks, of course, to our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up at gpro.net/nrf1. This has been the NRF1 podcast. So F1 in 2017 is up, it is running. And if Melbourne is anything to go by, it could be a classic driver's title challenge. Maybe a classic racing. Maybe not. We don't know. But that's half the fun, isn't it? We'll see you next week. Until then, goodbye. Let's call this podcast extra. What was your other highlight, Kyle?
Toto Wolff banging on the desk.
That was brilliant. Made a great GIF.
Yes.
And DT?
Was this the Ferrari? But
yes.
So we were having a bit of a debate earlier on about whether or not it was the 70th anniversary this year of Ferrari, because it's the SF70H car, and is it 70 years? But last year they had loads of celebrations, so is it just Ferrari kind of trying to capitalise on marketing and whatnot? According to Wikipedia, the company was founded in 1939 and built its first car in 1940, but didn't wear a Ferrari badge until 1947, which is, I assume, is the...
La, 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 70 years! So what we're effectively saying is I was right.
I don't know, I can't remember the answer.